Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Early Work, the show in which I, Reese, demand that performers come and read me the creative writing of their younger years. This week's guest is the genius, Nick Mohammed. I met Nick when I was about 19 in Edinburgh after adoring his Mr. Swallow show that year. And then I was so excited a couple of years later when he invited me to perform on a charity lineup he had put together, on which I was what's known in the biz as the weak link. The dud. You may have seen Nick more recently as the Kit Man in Ted Lasso or in his own sitcom Intelligence with David Schwimmer, no less. He's also in The Martian, for God's sake, the film The Martian with Matt Damon. The guy is absolutely smashing it. He came on to Early Work to talk alliterative magic tricks as I uncovered secrets of the Bradford Magic Circle with absolutely zero resistance. No magician integrity whatsoever. We hear an outline and a song from a pretty dark musical which used to have an insane title but now has no title but does feature a song with an insane title. And a recipe to play us out. If you think the sound effects that are in the recipe are mad, then they are the actual directions in the original document of exactly what sound effects to include during the recipe performance. He's the first person not to leave that sound effect bit at the end open to the interpretation of our producer. So, you know, you've got to respect that. Here he is, the eclectic early work of Nick Mohammed. Joining me on another early work is the phenomenal Nick Mohammed. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Reese. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm very well, very well.
You're in your utility room. You're wearing a backwards cap.
I'm wearing a backwards cap because I've got COVID hair. That's not like a symptom. It's just a dreadful.
We've just found a vaccine, mate. We don't need to find out about new issues.
I'm going to show you it. It's actually not too bad. It just needs a bit of a cut. But I'm actually doing some filming next week, so I'm going to try and see if I can bag a haircut on the back of that.
An on-set haircut.
Well, depending on what they're going for. But I have told them that they can just cut it into whatever they like because, you know, it's fine. It's grown out of all proportion. But yeah, so I'm wearing a backwards cap to cover that, and I'm in the utility room. So you might hear the boiler, but that's all you'll hear.
Yeah, well, there we go.
There's a washer dryer in there, but I turned it off because it would have been very noisy.
It would have been a bit rude if you had gone. Yes, I'll do your podcast, Reese, but I do have a three loads to get through here, so if you don't mind.
Well, I've got two kids, and so as you can see, we have got piles of washing in here, sort of.
All nicely, neatly folded. It's very impressive.
Nice and neatly folded, actually, yeah.
For listeners who don't know, by the way, Nick Mohammed is probably best known for the time in Edinburgh a number of years ago when he had mentioned he had some important people in his show. So me and a couple of other people, namely Mark Smith, our mutual friend, Johnny Sweet and Tim Key, had gone along just by coincidence together
to go and watch your show.
It was in the Pleasance upstairs. It was a Swallow show. And then as we were trying to get in, you had said to Johnny, oh, you should come watch my show, and because, you know, it's a big day. And so we were like, oh, great, yeah. We'd all already seen it, but loved it. We're going back. And then we were trying to get in on a pass, and this poor kid on the door of the Pleasance was like, no, you cannot come in on a pass, it's too busy or whatever. And then Johnny sort of pointed out, he did sort of ask me to come. So if there is a space, it would be good if I could go in, because I have told him I would. And this lad who worked for the Invisible Dot at the time, this 15-year-old who was flying from the Invisible Dot, just went up to the guy in the front of the Pleasance queue and went, do you realise who you're talking to? That is Tim Key and Johnny Sweet. And then this...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and this was a number of years ago, long enough that was not that big a deal. So this poor kid at the Pleasance, who was just like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what you're saying to me. This was sort of pre, the Partridge days. Yeah.
Wow.
We did get in. We watched the show.
That would have been 2012, I think. Was it all about numbers?
Yes. Memorized a deck of cards.
Oh, that's maybe that was 2010, actually. So maybe. Well, either way. You got in and you saw it.
Yeah, got in, I saw it. And and then I've been asking you to do this podcast ever since. If I had to guess what you were like at school, Nick, and I do, because it's the first format point of the show, what I've predicted is, obviously, big into magic. I'm assuming that's from a pretty young age. So it's difficult to tell whether that made you popular or ridiculed. But because you're too chirpy, I think, to be disliked. So when doing magic, I think you probably didn't take it that seriously if you were doing it at school. You weren't one of those kids who like got into magic and then it becomes their whole life as they start wearing like a long leather coat and acting like they're actually part of the occult and it defines them. So I think people probably really liked you doing magic. And I'm going to guess it culminated in you publicly doing a magic trick on a teacher in some sort of assembly. And that made everyone think you were some sort of god. I'm going to say you're probably pretty academic, but a bit bored by it all and interested in your other hobbies like magic and the violin. And you probably thrived at badminton and you were in lots of clubs and started a student magazine or something. I reckon you had one of those backpacks with a single Velcro strap that goes across like that. And that's, at a younger age, I think that, a diagonal strap backpack. When you were in primary school, I reckon you were considered some sort of guru with conkers, and people would always come up to you for advice on how to toughen them up because dipping theirs in vinegar and putting them in the oven was not working. Is any of this accurate?
I mean, Reese, that is uncannily accurate. I genuinely want to know, like, how much of that is just research and like you listening to mild, boring voice on other interviews, and how much of that is your intuition? Because I felt like I was sort of watching like a psychic or something, like a psychic show, and or you were kind of cold reading me.
I'd
say bang on. I'd say
I'm very good at this. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's cheating to know that you're into magic because you are. You've already talked about magic to me loads of times.
Yeah, that's true.
I saw you play violin in the show that I snuck into.
You see, actually, this is very Sherlock Holmes of you, isn't it? Actually, you've just taken all these things and fed them back to me, and I'm really impressed. Well, I think the diagonal strap on the rucksack is a very good observation, that, because one of the first pieces of comedy I did when I was a student was about the different ways people hold, carry their bags and carry their rucksacks. It was not very good, my set, but it was it absolutely made the distinction between the kind of the diagonal strap and the kind of holding it on both shoulders, and that, and how that holding it on both shoulders went from being kind of geeky to actually being quite cool. It sort of went sort of full circle there.
Yeah, much cooler.
The conkers thing, absolutely. Air and cupboard. I don't know if people wouldn't necessarily come to me for advice, but I had opinions on it. So if people had come to me for advice, I would have told them what for. What were the other things she said? It was all, the magic. The magic, I mean, yeah, I'm a very kind of typical kind of magic-y kid in that magic was like self-defense, really, as in it was a way of, and I was into it very young, like from like 4 or 5, I started doing it. And it was absolutely to kind of try and impress people in the playground and to sort of not get bullied, basically. And I distinctly remember in year 10 or 11, like when I remember, like, I was doing design technology, and all the pretty much every single other kid who was doing design technology GCSE was like a school bully. Like, it's really full on. And I was like, Christ, how am I? And you know, oh no, I wasn't bullied, but I remember, like, kind of, they were tough, those lessons to get through. And I remember particularly one, just like Mr. Pike, the teacher, saying, Nick, get out, you can't. And I got out playing, and I remember I could basically control the bully. Like, I could get the bullies to do for like only for 10 minutes, but it's 10 minutes of respite from them not being dicks.
Why, it must be control, isn't it? You are fully saying, I can tell you, you're implying, I can tell you what's in your brain, or I can make you pick this thing. And then it's literally saying, I'm better than you. Respect me.
Yeah, it was basically that. It didn't work. Like, it didn't work in the long term by any means. But just for that short period of time, I remember thinking, hey, this is good. This is a. But then it kind of ran its course a little bit at school, because, you know, I was in school from, like, you know, year seven through till end of sixth form. So what, like 11 to 18. And I remember, by the time it got to, and I'm still actively doing magic, but by the time it got to 18, like, the other six ones, they were just like, oh, just literally shut up. Like, just give it a break. Like, give it a rest. Like, what's with all this? They'd seen it all.
Yeah, that's it. The problem with magic is that it's amazing if you've never seen magic. And once you've seen any magic, you get to an age where you're like, it exists in a vacuum of age, doesn't it, magic, really, where you can properly control someone. Because if it didn't, the magicians would be the most respected people in the world, because we'd all have to say, well, they can tell us what we're thinking. They can control us.
Exactly. And I'd say largely the opposite is true, probably. But, like, you know, there's a difference between, I guess, performing to, like, you know, 11 or 12 year, you know, when you're 11 or 12 and performing to 11 or 12 year olds, to then when you're like 16 and 17 and performing to 16, who have all kind of matured at different rates. And I would say I was very immature, like, when I was at school. So I still love magic, and it definitely got me through school in lots of ways. And so, but yeah, an uncannily accurate description. I love the violin. What else did you say, Reese?
How early did you start, I said that you did a magic trick to a teacher in, like, an assembly, and then the whole school thought you were a god. I might have Hollywoodified this.
That must be that you've read that, because I did. I remember doing a like the first sort of proper, like, I don't know what proper stage show, as if it was like literally in a church hall, the church that my mum went to. I remember doing a they were quite long. I think they lasted like 2 hours. Yeah, I had a lot of material, and I was like 11 years old, and it was like, right, come back after the break where I'm gonna do another hour of boring magic. And I remember my maths teacher, Mr. Clough, came, and he sort of kept, my sister was at the school then, she must have been in sixth form and I was in year seven or eight, and she told him, oh yeah, come, and he'll come to watch it, because he'll love that. And I remember seeing him coming through the door and being like, oh god, it's Mr. Clough, he's come to see it. And I did the trick on him where I, like, borrowed a fiver and burnt it, and it appeared in the lemon. And then the next maths class that we had, he gave out test results for some maths test that we must have done, and he presented mine in, like, an orange, and I had to cut it open and get the test results out. It was so nice.
Yes.
So,
I was hoping you'd say that. That is so good.
They were like, it was such a nice school for that. Like, I was really supported. Like, all the teachers kind of like, yeah, great, go for it. It's just the other school kids who are a bit like, yeah, all right, well, we'll see
you
now.
What I love about that is you, first of all, described that trick as, you know, the trick where you burn a fiver and present it in 11, as if I'm supposed to go, oh yeah, sorry, yeah, not that hack trick. That really,
weird.
I don't think I, yeah, it's amazing that that's. That's probably considered, like, a really basic trick to you. And to me, it's like, what?
Not necessarily basic in terms of how you might, like, the method behind it, because then there are tons of methods, I guess. But it's quite a, you know, it's quite an old school trick, I guess. I mean, I'm not good on, like, magical history by any means, but it must be probably 100 years old. It was probably done, like, 100 years ago the first time. So, and loads of people have done it. And I've kind of it's kind of a classic of Magic now, you know, to present that trick in the way that the cups and balls is kind of quite a classic of Magic.
Did the rest of the pupils in your class have the context when he presented you your results in an orange, or were they looking at that going, well, he has gone insane?
I actually don't know if there was any preamble. I think he just presented me with an orange and proceeded to cut it open in front of me and pull out some sodding wet papers. I don't even know what score I got on that maths test.
Do you think that they thought that? Do you think they thought that you'd like broken the record for the highest ever A? And that's like,
here's an orange,
kids. You can get an A, you can get a B, but if you want to really succeed in life, you're gonna have to get a fucking orange. All right. Did the performing and the willingness to perform manifest itself in any other capacity other than Magic? Did you do any like plays? Were you in any school productions, or did you just stick to trickery?
No, I always sort of did. Yeah, I think I wished I had, in hindsight, maybe done some kind of acting, just partly because I could probably really benefit from having some kind of technical discipline in that stuff. But no, I never did it. I did like one like amateur dramatics production, like an Alan Ayckbourn thing, like when I was 17 or 18. And no, that was it. And then I sort of started doing a little bit more when I was a student. But not at school, certainly not when I was younger, in my teenage years. It was all kind of, I think I sort of almost pigeonholed myself. Like, I quite liked being, oh, he's the magic guy, like he's a magician. And so I didn't really
want that at school, don't you? When you're at school, definitely. You need to be typecast. You need everyone to go, that's the magic guy, he does magic. He plays football. He's magic.
He's fast at running.
He's fast. She can jump higher than you would imagine.
She can jump really high.
She can jump really so high. Her mum's a teacher. That's what we know her for.
Her mum's a teacher at the school. What was I going to say? I remember distinctly, and I was telling my wife this, and we found it a funny, it was just a funny memory. Just one of the cool kids at school, of which I wasn't one of them. And my wife was a cool school kid, basically. So we always have these discussions about what our childhoods were like from the two different perspectives. And there was one of the coolest moments I've ever had is when one of the cool sort of football guys kind of came up to me, and we'd just done this, like, I think a rugby lesson in PE. And it wasn't like I hated it and wasn't good at it. But I could run quite fast. I think just because I was short, I guess. I don't know. I could run. I remember one of the cool kids kind of coming up to me like a day later and saying, I hear that you're quite fast. And that was sort of it. And that was sort of walked off. And I remember thinking, I'm taking that as validation, like some kind of validation.
Yeah.
But I remember doing like races on like sports day, like in year eight, where like someone, like it was literally sort of in the lane next to me. They're about to call Ready, Steady, Go, whatever. And the guy next to me going, I literally don't even know why you're bothering. He had so little patience even making it around. And I was like, all right. Oh, okay. Well, I'm just doing it. And in the end, I beat him. I remember I didn't win the race, but I beat him. And I sort of went up to him. I was like, well, and he was like, don't even look at me. It was really weird.
Fantastic. I love the idea of the actual 100 metres in the Olympics, Usain Bolt just turning to people. Oh, no, someone turning to Usain Bolt the first time he runs, going, I don't know why you're bothering, mate.
I just don't know why you're bothering.
Maybe that's why Usain Bolt famously turned around for the last, like, 10 yards, just to look back and to go, fuck off, mate.
I count myself in a very similar position as Usain Bolt.
I would agree. I've always seen you as the Usain Bolt of the comedy world.
Yeah. All the magic world, you know.
It's whichever you prefer. I mean, you are quite quick at running. I said that to you years ago, didn't I? But it's nice to reiterate on this podcast.
Nice to double check.
Now, I understand some of the work that you've brought is magic related.
One of the things is magic related, yes. Yes.
So what's that?
Okay, so here we go. So this is, and I won't read all of it because you'll probably you'll just get too bored. So this was, so just to give you a little potted history. So I started doing magic when I was very young, when I was like four or five. But then it really, and I would just do it, and that's all I would ever really do. And I would kind of get books on it and books from the library and learn it. And then when I was, I can't remember exactly what age, I think I was 13, I joined the junior section of the Northern Magic Circle, which was a huge deal, like, for me. And, like, it meant that we would meet once a month in Bradford and basically do tricks. And then once a year, they had a convention in Harrogate, in the Crown Hotel. That's where it used to be. And it was, like, a magic convention. So it was basically, they'd have, like, lecturers come in, talk about magic, or there would be dealers there who would sell magic tricks, and there'd be, like, competitions, and there would be, like, shows, basically. So, and because the juniors were a big part of the Northern Magic Circle at the time, so this is basically an extract from a... I mean, it is so dreadful, like, from a trick that I came up with. Well, not, I didn't come up with the trick. Like, the trick is called Ring on Rope, and it's basically a solid metal ring in the way that you might have, like, linking rings, attached to a piece of rope, which has been tied at the end. And the idea is I'm trying to get the ring off the rope.
Right.
So I decided, because, I mean, so, like, there isn't really a presentation for that, per se. Like, you know, there is, it doesn't naturally lend itself to, like, an obvious presentation, or at least it didn't to me. And so I decided to write, like, this alliterative sort of patter for it. And that's what I'm going to read out. Now, Reese, you have to tell me, do you want me to read you my... I can show you it. But basically, so I've got, like, there are notes, there are little sort of, like, little stage notes that I've written to myself on this, which are like performance notes. I don't know if you want those. You
100%. Want me to
read... Okay.
Of
course. Well, I'll read them out where they're appropriate. So the first note to myself is... The R sound and the RE sound should be emphasized even in words such as approach. The more.
Right. And then I've written, really then I've making written, the most of this alliteration, even just R's yeah. in the middle of words.
Approach.
Yeah.
And then I've written this as if it's a fact. The more comprehensible and expressive this sounds, the funnier it becomes. So that's a little note to self.
There we go. I think they wrote that in History of Comedy books, I think they say.
Yeah, okay. So here we go. This is the first bit. Ladies and gentlemen, relax. It's Ring on Rope.
I mean, it's just a shame you didn't go with Radies and Rentalmen if you're going in straight with relax. Relax being number the first. I was going to say, maybe I should guess the first R, and I never would have gone for relax.
If I'd have started Radies and Rentalmen, like, before I'd even started any of the literature, they'd think, what's wrong with him?
He's doing some Scooby-Doo thing. We don't know what's happening here.
Okay. Radies and Rentalmen. Relax, it's Ring on Rope, the relatively revealing, realistic approach to refined reflection. That's the first sentence.
Lovely.
There you go. Remarkably, as I return or replace the ring rigidly onto the rope, it remains, and yet rotating is, and then I've got a stage note of pause, demonstrate, and look. Take up some of the rope in the left hand, as will otherwise be too long. I don't know what that means. And then the word resourceful is next to it. So I think that's meant to go, and yet rotating is resourceful. I think during all that, I'm basically demonstrating how the ring can't come off the rope. And then I say, remark. Righteous resemblance to rather relic effects remain resistingly repetitive. Regrettably, due to reasonable restless requirements, the ring releases or removes itself radically, ruthlessly from the rope in a rhythmic rigmarole. And then I would pretend I was trying to get the ring off the rope. And it wouldn't happen. So this is like a running gag that I would do in between tricks, basically. It wouldn't happen. And then I would say, basically... a line when it didn't happen, one of which was risotto, it's a rice dish. The next one was Rivita and the next one was Rivita and radish revolting. And the next one was prime time, it rhymes. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh no, I mean, curveball, rule of three. You've rule of three'd it. We think you're gonna do an R joke about food and you just gone with prime, but I bet you would have emphasized the R in that prime time.
And rhymes.
And it rhymes. Yeah, I suppose it worked. Prime time.
Oh, God.
It rhymes.
Oh, no, that's... I think that was all the alliterative bit to it. But then I've got a big old note here. Okay, so these are like now acting notes that I wrote to myself. Keep fixed grin on face. Finally, double take, a closer look at the system, and put on a confused expression. Change of expression from smile to a confused, wrecked grin. Then place the system down and go straight into normal style as we begin to introduce the next effect. I assume by the system I'm referring to the ring and the rope as if it is a system.
I love the phrase wrecked grin.
A wrecked grin, a confused, wrecked grin. I think what I really mean is grimace, but I didn't know what the word. I didn't know the word grimace.
And you could have, if you'd put grimace, you could have really emphasised the R in grimace there.
Grimace. I also, I've also got some suggestions for jokes before I even go into that. And it's my name's Nick Mohammed. I would call myself Nicholas at the time. My name's Nicholas Mohammed. For the sake of continuity and to avoid any uncertainty, I'll carry on using that throughout this whole act.
I like that. That's a good joke.
I found that quite funny. Yeah, it's a good joke. I'll be using that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh God, this is bad. My hotel. Oh yeah, because everyone was. That was the other thing about these conventions, is that everyone was staying in the hotel. So you kind of, you were sort of on stage doing your thing, and then you sort of just come off stage and sort of eat next to the person who's sort of been watching it. I had a joke in there. It was my hotel room number is 98. Oh, sorry, no, it's 198. Oh, that's another story. And that's bad, isn't it?
Oh, there we come on. How old are you at this point, coming up with these sweet gags?
14, 15.
That is good enough as a 15 and 14-year-old.
Well, it's probably that's probably stolen. Oh, yeah, because I've got the dates of when I was doing this. I did this at the Easter Parade Gala Show in 2001. Jesus. Richard Holmes' 50th birthday on the 7th of July, 2001. And this just says Stoke Dinner, 18th of October, 2002. So I got quite good.
Wow, Stoke Dinner. I wonder if that's like the football team.
Yeah, I've seen their big games.
So wait, for Richard's 50th. Richard Holmes' 50th. And he booked a 15-year-old magician.
Yeah, there was a lot of that going on at church. So I was sort of taken to church quite a lot when I was younger. And I sort of actively enjoyed it. I would define myself as an atheist, very much an atheist. But I enjoyed going
to
church.
You were cleaning up on birthday party bookings. You were making a fucking fortune.
Yeah, it was that, and it was off the back of church that I definitely got my first sort of like gigs.
Do you have any other stuff that like it similarly like has a presentation script or whatever?
Yes, I do.
So I love the alliteration one. It's nice to have all the R's. I mean, would you do like the alliteration one at birthday parties? Or was this just like when you were doing
a show? No, that was stage stuff. That was sort of stage stuff. So if I did birthday parties, I usually did like close-up stuff. I don't think I'd ever did that at a birthday party. But I do a lot of close-up stuff. This is Cards. So this was part of the same act. So I probably put the ring and rope down and then got this out. And the script for this is, ladies and gentlemen, but it should have been ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I've got to that part of the act where I do have a sudden urge to show you all a card trick. I don't know if I presented that as a joke or not. And what I'd like to do, ladies and gentlemen, if it's all right with you, is to borrow, and yes, I promise I'll give you them back, two members of the audience. I think I'll probably use that as swallow at some point. However, the bit where I say I'm going to borrow two members of the audience, I promise I'll give you them back. However, it is vitally important, and I can't stress that enough, that the people I do wish to come on... This is the first time I've read this. I'm not laughing because I think it's funny. It's just because it's dreadful. Hang on. Let me read that back. I can't stress enough that the people... Oh, hang on. Where was it? However, it is vitally important, and I can't stress this enough, that the two people I do wish to come and help me are in fact here today.
No way, that's good. I love the build-up. Okay, there was build-up there, and I thought, is going to be terrible. And good, that's funny.
Okay. Otherwise, it does present us with a kind of strange problem, which I really don't feel I should go into at this stage, on this stage. It's also equally important for similar reasons that the two people aren't actually the same person. Oh, God,
this is solid. This is absolutely solid comedy.
But then the problem with it is that, and I then go in to explain why it's a problem, which likewise has its own built-in difficulty. I think I didn't like trust myself that, that those jokes would land.
You and didn't know the jokes were finished.
I didn't know. No, I didn't know anything. And recently, this is carrying on with the script. And recently, ladies and gentlemen, there has been a lot of bad press as regards magicians making use of stooges or pre-planned volunteers from the audience. And I do just want to say that I really strongly believe that I'm no exception. And so Stuart and Joe would mind just coming out and getting on with it. I must have nicked that from someone. I will have nicked that. Don't give me any credit, Reese. I nicked that. I will have nicked
that. Well, whoever wrote that is funny. That's very funny stuff.
And then it's all sort of boring administrative, sort of pick a card, put a card back kind of stuff. That was a trick called Cards Across, where basically two members of the audience would count out 10 cards and they would kind of hold on to them. And you'd then put one of the sets of 10 cards into a card box and you'd wave that above the other set of cards, of 10 cards. And then one at a time, a card would travel from the card box to the person who was holding the cards, and you kind of count them as it was kind of happening.
Let me ask you a question here. How's it done? Tell us. How's it done?
I'll tell you the way I did it.
You're actually going to tell us. I thought part of being in the Bradford Magic Circle meant that stay silent.
Well, to a degree, yeah. I sort of think people can just look these things up. I just came up with my own way of doing it, which was to basically hold back three cards as I was pretending. I was putting the cards in the box. I would hold back three, and they went on the back of the box, but you couldn't see because the way I was holding the cards. And then as I was sort of gesturing between the two different piles of cards, I would drop the three onto the 10 in the other person's hand without them knowing. And then I would fake count those 13 cards to look like 10 just before going into it. And then I would fake count them to look like 11 and then 12 and then 13. And then the good thing is then they can count them and the person can take the cards out of the box and there's just 7 in there. So they can do the final bit of counting. I'd have to do it. But all the counting in between I have to do because it's fake.
Wow, I mean, there you go. Listeners, there you go. I mean, you've got no excuse not to become a magician now. I was planning on asking you, you saying, obviously, I'm not allowed to tell you that. And then I was going to do like a Paxman level interview with a magician where I just keep going, oh, stop avoiding it. Just tell us how it's done. But it's very nice. No. We got the result that we wanted, which was we all know how to do magic now. I thought there'd be some resistance, forgetting you are not currently a magician. You have another career.
Yeah, I think it's fine to. I think it's fine because I sort of get, you know, that's hardly an original method, I'm sure, but like it's what I kind of came up with myself at the time, so I just feel that that's fine to share that. Let me see if I've got anything else. The thing is, it just says climax to ring on rope after that Cards Across routine, which is not much magic. I mean, it's literally two tricks. I think I probably got each like 10, 15 minutes out of that. And then it does say after the climax to ring on rope, it just says greater gag, which is where I would say, ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to end by saying that was a great trick, but this is a grater, and then just bring out a cheese grater.
Perfect. I mean, that's the perfect ending to any show.
Yeah, which I'm sure was like a joke inside a cracker or something like that. But, you know, I'd gladly end with that again if I could, if I was allowed.
Lovely way to conclude the magic section. Now, I do believe there's another piece of work you've brought. Is that correct?
There is. Now, this is a musical. I was going to say, was I a big fan of musicals? I was like pretty big fan of music. Not like huge, 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 but I really liked Les Mis and I liked Phantom. Phantom was my favourite. But when, I think after seeing Les Mis, when I was probably in sixth form when I saw it, I decided, well, me and my friend Vix decided that we were going to write a musical together. And I was going to write the music and she was going to write the story and the lyrics. And so I just thought we could break this down because it is appallingly bad. And the only thing that survived from it is this. And I've actually had it laminated because I didn't want it to ever be destroyed. but it's the original outline of the musical, sort of summary of the story. So the title of the musical, you're not going to guess it, so I'll tell you it, is William, brackets, blind boy. That is then entirely scribbled out. I'm going to show you that bit is just completely scribbled out, and nothing replaces it. So we don't know what it's called.
Let me just say, I can see why you might scribble that title out.
Oh no, sure. It was certainly not politically correct. I mean, it was just not. It's not a great title, is it? Setting is Victorian London. Why not? The cast. This is interesting. So William, and then brackets, blind boy, 12. So he's 12 years old, and then it just says girl, Elizabeth, and then in brackets Lizzie. Sort of like as if so, and then it says writers Victoria Wood and Nick Mohammed. Victoria Wood was the name of my friend, not the brilliant comedian.
I was about to say, if you're humble bragging this in the least subtle way of all time going, I wrote this musical. My mate Vix. Yeah, she goes by Vix. By the way, it turns out it's one of the greatest comedy stars that this country's ever seen.
Exactly. Yeah. So Act One, prologue. Father dies and gives mum a cross / a brooch, as if we couldn't decide, I think, whether it should be a cross or a brooch. And then it says will equals a baby, and we've used the mathematical symbol for equals there, because there's no way we're writing is at that age. And then scene one is crime, and it says murder of mother. And then that's scribbled out, and then it just says witnessed by mother, which is a huge change. I mean, from her point of view, it's a huge change.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, what a day for the mother, that she was about to be murdered and then she just witnesses a crime. So did she witness a murder?
I don't know. It's just, yes, I think so. Well, you'll see later on, but I can't work out whether if she's dead or not by this point. Because then it says, the next scene is day-to-day life. See, and I'm going to leave this bit blank. See how the lead cannot cope without his, and then guess what word comes. But you're not going to get it.
Relax. No,
it's not relaxed.
I will go for how he can cope without his, I mean, mother.
Well, you'd think that. It says mouth.
Mouth?
It says mouth.
Oh, this poor lad. He's already deaf and now he's got to cope without his mouth.
But I think I think I meant mother, but it does say mouth. And it says needs helping to do simplest tasks. Then it says the next scene is the murder of the mother by the father of Elizabeth in a gang. So I think that means the father of the girl murdered the mum of William, the boy. And then the next scene just says comforted by Elizabeth, but I don't know who.
Well, presumably Will, who formerly equaled the baby, but now is coping without his mouth. Now, I'm a bit confused because surely we need the mother. The mother only just got given a brooch / cross.
Yes.
And then
yes.
She's instantly killed / witnesses something.
I know. And later on, it says Will recognises mother by cross, which is then underlined / brooch. But so I think we were erring on going with cross.
Right.
By that point. I don't know. It's not really the kind of detail that you probably need at the outline stage. And then it just says
it takes the cross for him to recognise his mother.
I think so. I think because he knows by feel, I think he knows that it's her because she wears a certain type of
course.
Cross.
But he must have felt her face before.
Well, I don't know how she was killed.
Good point.
It's the honest answer to that. then it just says village, drab, smog, small. Local teacher, policeman, greengrocer. But I don't know where they're not in the cast list, so I don't know where these people have come from. So that's Act One. So I think all that's really happened in Act One is that the mum has died or been killed. Act Two is 10 years later, and William and Liz are 22. It says, in brackets, fostered by vicar during teens. I don't know how you're meant to show that in a scene.
Those are pretty hefty brackets. Those brackets are doing some heavy lifting.
Yeah. And then the next scene is still friends with Liz, which is, I think that probably should have gone in brackets, because I think that's something that you can presume. Whereas fostered by Vicar during teens is actually quite sort of a lot of heavy, from an exposition point of view, that's doing quite a lot of heavy lifting, isn't it? So next scene, she commits, I think this is, so Liz commits a crime and is going to be hanged. There's so much death in it as well. Will provides an alibi because he's sure she's innocent. Brackets, rest of family hung.
Wow.
Which seems a bit, this seems a bit unfair.
Wow. Wait. So let's clarify exactly what happened there.
Yes.
She is proven innocent. But she's believed to be innocent because she's got an alibi.
He provides her, I'm guessing, with a false alibi because he is sure she is innocent. So he doesn't know for sure, for absolute. There's no factual proof that she's innocent, but he just thinks he's sure she is. Then, and as a result, the rest of her family are hung. I don't know why the rest of the family are hung. They sort of hung on her behalf.
One of the quirks of the law in Victorian England, that if you've got an alibi, we'll hang your family.
Well, if you're saying it's not you.
Yeah, it's got to be someone.
Well, it was definitely someone. We're not sure. Let's hang them all, apart from you. Which is weird.
It's either you go or everyone but you goes. That's the law. Yeah. This is Victorian England. Yeah.
This is what Victorian London's like. Fine's brooch / crotch. Oh, quote. Sorry, Jesus. Fine's brooch / cross and realises who she is. They part. I don't know what that means.
I think
Has she stolen the cross?
He realised, that's sure the way that they realise that her dad killed his mum, right? That's how he learns.
Very good, Reese. Yeah,
this info. And they, right. My favourite bit about that is they part is nowhere near dramatic enough for what the end of that relationship would be.
Yeah, just they part. Yeah, and bear in mind it's meant to be a musical as well. So it would be a big old dramatic sort of musical.
Yeah,
I guess
because you can't just go, we've been friends for years, we were fostered by the same vicar, crucially. I was a false alibi for you during our teens. Yeah, I was a false alibi for you. We're still friends. I've just found out that your dad killed my mum. You know what? Let's just go our separate ways, like two ships passing in the night. No, you'd go, I need revenge.
Now, sadly, she, as a result, commit suicide, and it says brackets hung just in case we thought that she might
of course
in honor of her family, I guess. then it says he comes round to make up and finds her dead, so it's a bit Romeo and Juliet. This, she's holding the brooch, he's poised over her, and that's it. That's as far as we get with that, with that bit of the outline.
Wow,
now then,
there's
some very weird bits. So, hang on, I need to find. Let me find the bit. I think I've got it on my laptop. So then there was a bit of music that I wrote, which I can maybe play for you.
At this juncture, I cannot imagine where music goes into this story.
Okay, well, I'll tell you the title of the song. The title of the song is "That Woman From Whom We Took Them Goblets." The thing is, I can't play it for you here, but I'm gonna play the tune. I'm just gonna sing you the tune. It goes dum da da dum da da dum 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 da da dum da da dum 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 da da dum da da dum 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 da dum dum dum. So it goes, that woman from whom we took them goblets died last night with the one that saw us. We had to rectify this problem, or else we'll die. That's how that went.
So I've got a lot of information here to be doing my scoring with. We're at the point now where I've got to score your work, Nick. And there's three categories I score them on. They're all out of five. The first category is originality. Now, you have already told me that you would sort of take magic tricks and that was the done thing in the magic world. So that does have to come into it. But the alliteration of the R thing in a magic trick, I've never seen David Blaine or Derren Brown suddenly just say every word.
They're chomping at the bit, I think.
Exactly. Once this comes out, I will be seeing that. But I've never seen that before. Even phrases in your own stage notes to yourself, like wrecked grin, are brand new to me. I've never heard that before. Ooh. The issue with the musical is, while the story is complicated enough and some weird shit goes on, and I've never heard of it, can't imagine a musical called William Blackett, Brackett's Blind Boy, but so that's very original. But it is just a musical set in Victorian London,
where everyone gets hung.
Yeah, where everyone is hanged. It's the stage notes are, it's a village and it's drab. And I was like, yeah, it's a musical. So there's some elements to that. So I reckon I will go for, I mean, to be honest though, that song being called That Woman From Whom We Took Them Goblets is pretty original to my mind. So given that most of the stuff that you individually put into stuff was really original, but then sometimes they were in a world that was less original and you were sort of in the pressures of these things. Like maybe, you know, you're trying to do a musical, so you're, you know, trying to bow to the rules of being in a musical, and like magic, you're just going, oh, everyone nicked stuff. But everything you added was really original. So I'm going to go for 4 out of 5 for originality.
Thank you.
Pure teen horniness is the next category. And,
Zero.
It couldn't really be less horny, could it? I mean, there's just magic tricks with all the R's, and weirdly, the R sound is supposed to be, but possibly the sexiest sound. I mean, we've all heard French before, and yet somehow you've taken that and you've turned it into something asexual. It's impressive.
Yeah.
And then that musical. I mean, Jesus Christ, mate. Is there anything horny in that? I mean, it's just a horrible, everyone's dead and everyone's evil. Realizing people being hanged.
There's a vague romantic connection between Lizzie and David, not Lizzie and David. Liz and David Elms.
Based on those, is it? I mean,
it's
surely.
That's not their life story, no. Liz and William. I mean, they clearly got a thing going on, but that's not what the musical focuses on, really. It's more about that cross and brooch.
Exactly, yeah. Unless cross and brooch is some sort of filthy metaphor, which I don't think it is, then I think the horniness score has to be 0.
Yeah. If anything, it's more about whether it's a cross or a brooch.
Yeah,
that seems to be the biggest dilemma of the entire musical is what are we going to decide?
And finally, the last score is the Mickey Mouse Club score, alternatively known as Ryan Gosling Ryan Goose score, which is sort of how close is it to your work now? How much potential does it show for the star I now know you to be? And I've got to say, it's quite high, especially the magic stuff. I've obviously seen you do magic stuff in character on stage, and you were saying sometimes throughout that you think Mr. Swallow has actually said some of these lines. Some of those lines, I think, whether you wrote them or not, hold up and are funny enough. So you had certainly an eye for it. I mean, I really like the stuff with the getting the two people out of the audience. It's crucial that they're here today. We need to make sure they're not stooges. That's great. That's great stuff. I'm a big fan of the phrase will equals a baby. And for some reason, I can imagine you saying that now. So I don't know. Maybe I'm giving too much credit to the past you. But like, you know, risotto, it's a rice dish. That sort of even that sort of gag of like just forcing the alliteration halfway through is something I could imagine happening, you know, in a slightly more stylish way. Same with the greater joke. Come on, the greater joke's solid. It's an all-time classic. So I'm going to go for 4 out of 5 for Mickey Mouse Club score as well. Four out of five. That's an 8 out of 15. It's a pretty solid score.
Hang on, so did I get 0 for the horniness?
Yeah, and I think you're lucky to get 0, to be honest. I could have gone into minus figures for that.
Taking points away, okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
It now comes to the time where I will level the playing field and read you something of my early work. Before you score mine. This is a poem I found that I wrote when I was 16. The title of the poem is All I Heard Was No. Along the shattered plank we go, forget the battered sheath we know as we decline the means by which our heartbeats throw. Declare guilt among our parting show, a curtsied grin with curtains throw, and though as magic has it flow, the rigid edge lay low. Cringing though our feelings grow and growing with each cannon's blow, each performing artist set in stone or snow, it melts as though. The whispered temperament of so, which ties that bind the eager crow and staggers throughout moonlit glow, and all I heard was no.
That's That's really good.
Come on, mate. It's absolutely... Yes. The reason I picked it is because it had the word magic in it.
I mean, it's absolute nonsense, isn't it? It's really good. I honestly think that's great. I love. I was waiting for the what's it called? All I heard is no.
All I heard is no. Yeah.
Yeah, I was waiting for that bit. I mean, what's it about,
mate? Who knows? At times, it's like it, because obviously it's called All I Heard Was No. Clearly, the task in my head was just try and rhyme with no as much as possible.
I see, yeah.
I think if it's called All I Heard Was No, it will be about being rejected romantically, I imagine. But then it's all about planks and crows and curtains. It's just
performance.
It's just
artists.
A nonsense. Yeah, yeah. Where does that come from? And then
I don't know.
Each performing artist set in stone or snow.
It melts though, or something like.
It melts as though.
I like that bit. There's a nice rhythm to it, wasn't there? Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of that. I didn't really write much poetry when I was younger. So what have I got to judge it on? Originality?
Yeah, first up, it's originality out of five.
Well, it feels like a sort of... I don't want to sort of sit on the fence, but I don't want to overpraise. I don't want to say it was rubbish. So I'm going to say 3 out of 5 for originality. I mean, it seems absolutely fine. It seems perfectly reasonable that you could come up with that as a 16-year-old. But it felt like, you know, you put some effort into it as well. So, yeah, it's sort of like a solid sort of 2-1. 16.
Yeah, I'll take it. I mean, by comparison, this was me at 16. I certainly wasn't invited to read that poem at anyone's 50th birthday party.
Richard Holmes. It's going to be
Richard Holmes,
you
missed out. Richard Holmes, mate, you could have had that. Along the shattered plank we go. Happy 50th. Next up is...
Don't you know?
Yeah. Next up is pure teen horniness.
Well, I only got that now that you sort of told me about it being maybe about rejection and the sort of sheath thing. So I would say... Well, it's probably 4, isn't it? 3 or 4. I'm gonna, yeah. No, there's too many words in there that dilute it, like the performance art stuff and that. Which just feels, and the snow melts and things. I think I'm gonna go with the safe 3 again.
Okay, I think that's fair enough. Yeah. And finally, it's Mickey Mouse Club. Ryan Gosling, Ryan Gosling score. Sort of the potential it shows. How close is it to my work now?
There's a nice conciseness to it, I think, like rhythmically. And I think I always think of you as a very concise, your joke telling, I think, is very concise. I think you're very efficient with the way you use words and the way you kind of tag punchlines and so on. So I think I can definitely detect you in that. But then it's not, but then it's absolute nonsense. And so I don't want to be rude and say, is it bad if I say, oh God, Reese, it's just, I can see you all over. I mean, it reeks of you.
You wouldn't be the first to say out and out. There's people on this podcast who have out and out said, I might as well be watching your show from this year. That's the same.
Yeah, no, I can't say that. So I'm going to get back and I can see you in there. So I'm going to say about 2.
Perfect. Well, that means, I mean, what a perfect level playing field. We both score an 8 out of 15, so we're even. So
that looks like I did that on purpose, but I didn't mean to.
No. Look, as I always say on this podcast, that there's no winners. The message is we're both losers. But in this case, we actually are both losers. Normally there is one clear loser, but we are. We are both losers for different reasons. Mine was writing about sheaths and yours was... doing magic and musicals.
All sorts of stuff.
But that brings us to the final piece. Whatever you want to play us out with, it's up to you. We will produce it up. We'll put music under it, sound effects, whatever is appropriate.
Okay. But so I wrote this as a student. And so I'd started to get into comedy over kind of magic and stuff, but very much sort of was doing like lots of different characters. And, you know, what I've kind of learned is that actually, you know, you might think of yourself as a character comedian and really you can probably just do one well and that's it.
Right.
But I was sort of determined to think that I could do loads. And this was a character, I think sort of based on like Delia Smith. I mean, do people even know who that is? Who was a quite renowned TV chef back in the mid-90s.
Oh,
maybe.
People definitely know Delia still. Come on, of course they do.
Okay, fine, all right. But she's not really been on telly as much now, I would say. It's not. So it's quite... So at the time, it was, you know, it was sort of a kind of a spoof of one of her things. And I sort of read it in a kind of slightly breathy voice, which I can sort of do. It was called Recipe, yeah. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Home Cooking, a delightfully middle-class approach to cooking in the home, delivered in the most effortless and fluid of non-patronising manners a speaking ever smelt. I'm Sue, and always will be. This here, now to explain, delightfully steamy dish comes from a little-known region of Seville and encapsulates all that Spanish food has had to say and smell in just one dish. Buenos appetites! Its aroma has been likened to that of Nightingale's Song by several leading experts, and the connoisseur's advice to suck on Manuela de Zimbabwe's masterful novel Papri's Mama Cha-Cha for a more formal introduction to this approach. Absolutely nonsense. And now... the recipe. Notwithstanding these, take two eggs and whisk until dry. Keep whisking until dry. In the meantime, crack open two more eggs and cover with yolks. Add the lemons and do not stop until you keep going. At this point, be careful not to add too much lamb. I made this mistake twice recently and yesterday and killed 14 dogs. My oh my, what a lovely selection of well and truly mortal brunette bitches. After this, it's really bad. After this, preset the oven to gas mark 2 and blow until you're hot. Stir well and make sure the oven is placed on the middle shelf. Press play and brown until golden cheese. It's now time to add my eggs. Open oven door and climb in. Gently prick those 8 yams together with the sauce and not forgetting, of course, black pepper. And repeat until tired. Set the oven timer to the year 1885 and wait until dawn. Morning! That was a great recipe, and this is a grater. Oh, that's that cheese gag. It says show cheese grater. For a truly Spanish touch, serve chilled and coated with knobs of boiling water for taste. I like to sprinkle the leftovers on the lawn out back, although the onomatopoeic amongst you may wish to maybe splash some slapdash boil on your zip lips. Join me next week when I'll be showing you the only true way to genuinely scallop a fish. Bye.
That Jesus. Is amazing. I cannot believe the greater joke makes a second appearance. That is exciting.
That must easily be like 10 years apart. Like, you know.
So you were right. When you said the greater joke the first time, you sort of said, I'm sure I've used that since. And then it's here. It's in recipe. What? I mean, everything about that. It begins with an R, the title of that project, for a start. It includes the greater joke. I mean, you're really biting off your past self. There's some great bits in there. I'm Sue. Whisk until dry. All the stuff about lamb. Ah, it's great. It's lovely. And I'm disappointed that you said you would never perform this now, because I think having heard it, people would pay to see this character. There it was, Nick Mohammed, formerly equals a baby. William Blind Boy is a good title for a musical, to be fair. Maybe they should have stuck that out. Man, I love those sound effects in that recipe. Fire engine in there, doorbells, why not? My guess about him performing a magic trick to a teacher, by the way, was not researched, I must say. That one, just a good guess. I don't know what to do with this power I have. I keep getting it right. It's utterly worthless to have the special ability to tell someone something that already happened to them. I mean, that is the opposite of magic. Do check out Intelligence, Nick's MI5 sitcom, if you haven't seen it, with David Schwimmer. It's on Sky One. Series 1's on demand and Series 2's out soon. Please give the podcast a review, subscribe to it, and in an absolutely ideal world, tell all the radies and rentalmen you know about it. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.